Welcome to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7 FM. Join us as we celebrate the sparks that ignite, the events that inspire, and the songwriters that create. With your host, Steve Robb.
New England area singer-songwriter Chris Levancher is a seasoned and skilled craftsman mining life's subject matter, family challenges, work, love and love lost, childhood memories, and finding one's place in the universe. His song Nostalgia received an honorable mention in the 2018 Woody Guthrie Folk Festival Songwriting Contest, and in 2022 and 2014, Chris was selected to play in the Grassy Hill Falcon Ridge Folk Festival Emerging Artist Showcase. So Chris Levancher, welcome to Song Creating.
Hey, Steve. Well, thanks. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you along. And, you know, we talked about your name here, and it's Levancher, L-A-V-A-N-C-E-R, but that's a capital V.
C-H-E-R, and it is a capital V, and it's not Levancher, mainly because I grew up in North Central Pennsylvania, where it would definitely be Levancher.
So, but is it a French origin?
It is French origin, yep. Okay. And I suspect it's, you know, by way of Canada first. You know, there is a mountain range in France called the La Levancher, but I don't know if the family actually comes from there or not. We don't really know a whole lot about where we come from.
So having been a Midwesterner myself, I can hear when you say Levancher. I mean, is this the western part of Pennsylvania in the area like around Pittsburgh or what part?
I grew up in North Central, which is very rural. Probably the closest like known city would be Corning, New York. Actually, we're right on the New York State border.
Okay.
So it's mostly just farmland and beautiful rolling hills. I mean, it's a great place to grow up and a great place to move on and go somewhere else.
Well, I spent 4 years in Rochester, not too far from there.
Okay,
I do remember that accent up there was stronger than the Midwestern accent I heard when I moved to Wisconsin. So maybe it has a little bit more Canadian influence. I'm not sure. But that is it's one of those areas where people don't necessarily travel to on vacation, although it is beautiful up there.
Yeah. I mean, if you're traveling there on vacation, you probably are a hunter. So we do get lots and lots of folks up from Philadelphia and New Jersey, that are there to hunt. 'Cause we have, you know, the deer are kind of like squirrels. They're just all over the place. So it is a really, really great place to come hunt if that's your thing. Not really my thing, but you know, I understand it and can appreciate it.
So when did you move away from there?
When I went to college, I actually went from there to Pittsburgh, for college. I went to Carnegie Mellon University. That was my first, being away from home was when I moved to Pittsburgh, and that would have been 86 is when I started university.
We're not giving ages away here though, you know. but you just did. So.
Yeah.
So you didn't go into the state college, the Penn State system?
I didn't, because I was, although they have a good program too, but I was interested in becoming an actor.
Oh.
So Carnegie Mellon has a really incredible theater program. So I was fortunate enough to get accepted there, and actually was on pretty much full scholarship for the acting program there.
Wow. This where so I assume you must have acted in high school to get that, to go that direction in college. Is this where your musical experience was launched as well?
Certainly very, very influenced by musical theater. Yeah, for sure. I did a lot of that, as well as the chorus and band and that sort of thing. That was my primary musical influence. And I think also where my writing kind of comes from too. You know, I was always very interested in development of character. So, you know, I think a lot of my songs, I hope at least that at least what I'm attempting to do is to kind of, you know, develop a character. And so a lot of my songs are more, you know, kind of like fictional character based, but you know, there's always a part of you in there somewhere.
So you, I'm thinking back to the, you know, the classic musicals that you probably performed in high school, like, I don't know, Annie Get Your Gun or, you know, some of these classics. What was one in particular that, that you remember starring in?
I was well known for Charlie Brown. So You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, and that sort of thing. We did Carousel, and we did Guys and Dolls and, you know, all the, that kind of standard fare.
So the character development part of this really appealed to you in your songwriting. And it's, I'm curious about that because your songs don't tend to, they don't tend to so much be about a person as they are about a, an experience or an area. At least the ones I'm familiar with, more about a experience or, but I don't know. Tell me a little bit about how that, worked into your songwriting.
Well, I guess, you know, character and plot too are, you know, those are all elements of, of, you know, theatrical writing, I suppose. And I don't, it's not that I necessarily consciously am thinking about that, but I think that's just kind of where I tend towards. So, you know, I don't necessarily always have like this something that I need to say or express. A lot of times the songs just kind of develop initially from just kind of poking around on the guitar and finding kind of a cool something there. And so then I just start thinking about, well, what does this make me feel? Or what does this sound like? Or who, you know, who or what could this be? And usually from there, it's, you know, some sort of phrase develops. And then it's just kind of like, you know, following from there. I really, so many times, at least in the very beginnings of a song, I have no idea what I'm writing about. It just kind of reveals itself.
Yeah, it finds its way.
Yeah, exactly.
So you don't really know how the story ends until you get there.
Most often that's the case. Yeah. Huh. And sometimes, you know, you write yourself into a corner and you know, they just don't finish. But that's typically what I'm doing. And I, you know, I don't necessarily recommend my songwriting strategies to anybody because it's, it seems very, it's a painful process, you know, but.
Well, it seems to work for you.
I guess, I, you know, sometimes it works.
There must be some point in that song where you're following along in whatever it may be, and you've got to now tie this together, right? You've got to bring that last verse, last line back to the first verse. And it must be wonderful when all of a sudden you go, aha, there's that line.
Yes. In fact, I'm working on a song right now that, you know, and it, I often will take, you know, several weeks to be able to get through a song. It's pretty slow, torturous process for me. But I've got, you know, I've got two verses and a chorus. I know I need to kind of, you know, have that circling back or at least connecting the beginning to the end. So I'm just kind of sitting with it and trying to figure out, you know, how that's going to come out and
kind of letting it simmer.
Yeah. And I have, you know, I have some thoughts and ideas, but, I'm not really, you know, it hasn't like, I haven't got that light bulb yet. So,
So let's go back to, your years in, North Central PA. I'm picturing you as the quiet kid who watched, observed and because your songs now are so observational and, you know, third person. And does that describe you somewhat? Cause yeah. I know some people can never sit still.
That's totally me. You know, and even though I was involved with theater and acting and stuff, I definitely am an introvert. So, yeah, I definitely, I sit back, I watch, I'll interject something, and then duck. but yeah, pretty much that's the case. And, you know, tend to be able to kind of fit in and hang with pretty much anybody. You know, I was friends with the theater crowd, and I had a few guys who were, you know, the jocks, and, you know, could hang out with the kids who were hanging out in the AV department and that kind of thing too. So, yeah, I kind of just am able to kind of be with people and mostly just kind of, you know, listen and watch and observe.
I think I had to learn this later in life that it's much more entertaining to sit and listen than to actually talk.
Yeah, exactly. You learn a lot more.
You do. Where'd you start with the music and playing an instrument? Were you a guitar player from the start?
I was not. No, I picked up guitar playing pretty late in life, actually. You know, I took piano lessons as a fairly young child. And then I played trombone in band. I liked the piano, but it didn't really, you know, I was just kind of doing it because, other friends were taking lessons and, you know, my mom thought it was a good idea sort of thing. I did write a few really like awful songs, like in kind of junior high school, on piano. So I do remember kind of playing those. But yeah, it wasn't until really kind of like after college, after I graduated, that I kind of picked up guitar, and I didn't really do it seriously until I moved here to the Boston area in, 95. When I got more serious about it, and I actually took lessons with a local guy here who's fantastic instrumental guitar player, Ken Bonfield, who's in, he lives in Gloucester now, but he's, you know, he's internationally known, as a fingerstyle guitar player. So I studied with him for a number of years, and we've become really great friends. So he's, you know, at least the musical part of my songs are completely influenced by, you know, by his stuff. And I've always really liked, I listen to a lot of instrumental guitar, like the, you know, if you remember the Windham Hill days.
Oh, sure.
So all of those guitar guys, you know, Michael Hedges and Alex DeGrassi and Will Ackerman, of course, who, you know, was the founder of Windham Hill. So yeah, that even in high school, I was aware of those guys. Leo Kottke, was a huge favorite too.
Even in high school.
Yeah. I think I kind of was introduced to those. I think my mom was listening to at least the Windham Hill stuff. And then probably from there, I discovered Leo Kottke.
Was there a big folk influence in that part of the state?
Certainly not growing up in my high school formative age. When I went to Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh, there's a great radio station, WYEP. That's where I first kind of started to poke my toe into more of the folk world. So at that time, you know, Sean Colvin was getting played, and John Gorka, and all those guys, Richard Schindel, and those were the folks that I first got my, you know, my interest peaked in the folk world.
Yeah. What about, was there bluegrass influence up there, or Appalachian music?
You know, there certainly was, and I didn't get to be a part of that growing up, but certainly now, there's a really wonderful, festival there. At least I'm not sure I think it may have recently just stopped happening. But the Hickory Fest is what it was called. And there was a band, really great, bluegrass band called the Hickory Project, that's from kind of that area. And, so yeah, there's definitely bluegrass influence in there, but I didn't catch any of it growing up.
Yeah. You talk about pickers, and those guys are and so many of them seem to be self-taught, you know, at least a lot of the ones that come out of the Ozarks, and it's just a family thing. Boy, are they amazing. Well, yes. I notice your songs, and at least, not all of them, but some of them, I hear a little bit of dobro in there, and, some mandolin, some variety of instruments that really kind of harken back and give you that nice kind of folky small town feel to them. And it seems to me, is that sort of where your heart lies in that small town atmosphere?
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, and I think I've even said, you know, in my bio or something that you know, that I still kind of look back and, you know, think about people from that area when I'm writing. You know, lately I've been writing these kind of very sort of nostalgia kind of pieces. And, you know, certainly the song that we're kind of going to talk about is that way. Yeah, for sure. I'm very influenced by that area.
Could you say it's something like Andy of what is that called? Mayberry RFD? Or is that putting too sweet a...
Yeah, it's probably a little too sweet. But, you know, it certainly has those elements. You know, it was a little more hip because we had a, you know, a university in town. There's a very small university. It's probably about 3,000 students. But at the time it was Mansfield State College, and then it became a university. I'm not sure how or what difference that made, but
yeah. So you said you moved to Boston around 95 or so.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That must have been a big big chip. Well, yeah, I guess you were in Pittsburgh, so you had experienced the city life, big city lights and all of that.
Boston. Yeah. Although, but yeah, certainly the change to Boston. The expense was quite a shock moving from Pittsburgh. I think I was paying like $375 for a 2-bedroom apartment in one of the nicer neighborhoods of Pittsburgh, and then came here and it was like, holy.
Oh my gosh. So did you come here as a professional musician or did you?
Oh gosh, no. I'm still not a professional musician. This is just this is something I do for love.
Right. There's always there's a high tech or coding or some kind of sales background that a lot of us have in some way. Well, we don't really care about what you do outside of your passion. This is a passion project interview, as they all are. So did you get into the big open mic scene, which was huge at the time in Cambridge in the 90s?
Well, I missed the heyday of it. Cause like I said, I came to it pretty late. So I just started playing guitar in any sort of serious way when I first came, you know, and so it took a number of years from there to really start writing. I probably didn't start writing until about 1999. I'm just thinking what really kind of sparked it was the birth of my son, who, you know, and he was born in 96. So, you know, I think probably I wasn't even thinking about getting in front of people until 98 or so. And even then it was, you know, I have really pretty, you know, especially considering my acting background, it's kind of strange, but I really had a very hard time getting on stage with just myself and a guitar. My hands would get so shaky and, I just really had a very hard time playing. I still suffer from that a little bit. It's gotten better. It's a totally different animal from going on stage with somebody else's words, to being there, you know, almost naked with your own stuff.
Well, you kind of have that guitar to hide behind, but I found that a microphone is something to really hide behind too. And I don't mean to hide, but it does. There's something about it. Without that microphone, you really do feel even a little bit more exposed than if you were just out there without it. What was your first real positive experience that really made you want to keep going?
Wow. Well, I mean, I kind of got involved with a small group of songwriting friends. So my current wife, who's my second wife, her name is Esther Friedman, and she's a songwriter. And she came up through that real heyday of the open mics in Boston. So she was very involved with that. And, you know, she talks about, you know, some of the really big people who've made it, you know, that she saw them at open mics. So that's kind of cool. But, you know, hanging out with her and Esther had, you know, a lot of songwriting friends. So we would have groups and, you know, and I was getting some nice feedback from those folks. So that was probably what made me think, you know, there's something here, something to pursue, and not just, you know, it kind of like made me say, well, you really ought to get these out into the world. So I did kind of start going out to some of the open mics and you know, really kind of made me think that I should kind of put them on a record too. So that eventually happened as well.
So was it, did the writing of lyrics come easy to you?
No, the lyrics are the hardest part for me, for sure. Cause I'm not a big conversationalist. I struggle with words for sure. I do, you know, they mean a lot to me, and I do want to make sure that what I'm writing is, you know, it's clear, tells a story, is not overly written. You know, I try to be pretty, you know, pretty concise with what I'm writing, and the words are super important to me. But I definitely struggle with them. I tend to be one of those writers who can't help editing along the way.
Nothing wrong with that.
You hear about people who just kind of like, you know, get it out, you know, get the feeling out, get, you know, spit it out. Don't worry about what you're writing. Just keep at it. I haven't been able to really, you know, work in that mode very well. I definitely am self-editing as I go, for good or for bad.
Yeah.
You know, I think it may, you know, I may limit myself in some ways because, you know, doing that, there certainly, you know, if I were to let myself go a little bit more, at least from what I hear other people talk about with their writing, that, you know, you can go to unexpected places that, you know, maybe I'm not able to get to, because I'm editing.
Whatever you're doing, that seems to be working for you. I know it is funny. I'll sit down with the, you know, I think I am more often than not writing on the computer, which I wish weren't the case. I'll scribble in my book too, but sometimes you just sit and go, I know there's a feeling I'm trying to get out here and I'm trying to express, and what is it? And it's almost like there's a painter's guide. There's a color I want to put into this little part of this painting. What is that color? And you have to look and look and look and maybe try one color and say that just doesn't work, and then find another one. And it is a struggle.
I think I'm
probably along the lines of same as you, where the music might come a little easier than the words do. But.
Well, I love that idea of colors, you know, I mean, that really, you know, I can understand and feel that, because that's, you know, I think I probably work a little bit visually as well. So I understand that.
Well,
thesauruses are great, you know, for yes, trying to find those colors.
Yes, they are. As is rhymezone.com. We all know that one. So yep. the color of mud is something that we're going to talk about a little bit with your song. And I remember this was Hurricane Agnes, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And I was 11, I think, and my grandparents lived in outside of Harrisburg. And we were going to go visit them. And I remember at the time that he either had to put off this trip I don't remember now what actually happened, but Agnes did have an effect on that, because I think it was the Susquehanna. Were you along the Susquehanna? Does that flow
No.
up?
We were, the river that ran through my town is called the Tioga. And actually the town that I lived in is called Tioga too. It basically fed into, I believe it feeds into Susquehanna. There may be
they
some
all do
other
eventually, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, it's mountains. So, you know, it's all the towns are kind of in valleys. And, you know, the rivers kind of cut through those valleys. And, Yeah. So it was pretty devastating to that little town, that flood.
Well, so your song is called After the Flood.
Yeah.
And you named the album that the song is on After the Flood.
Yes.
So this is the song of that album, and it's just you on the guitar, if I recall, right? I don't even think I heard a second guitar.
No, it's right? just no. And it was just it was recorded, you know, as it is, you know, there were not really any cuts or edits to it. It just pretty much a one take. Well, you know, took a couple takes to get the one take, but
yeah. So take us back to, what was that, 1972, 73?
Yep, 1972. So we're at the 50th year anniversary this year. It passed, I think it was June. But yeah, so 50 years ago. Again, showing my age. But I was four at the time. And so, yeah, the song is pretty much just kind of like the little bits of scraps of memory that I have, and then, you know, stories that were told. You know, it pretty much, I wanted to capture, well, first of all, I think it, you know, I wrote it because I knew the anniversary was coming up, but I also kind of, it was during pandemic as well. So, there's a little bit of that in it too, I think. Just this idea of, you know, coming back and being affected by, you know, this larger kind of natural disaster, sort of, so to speak. Yeah, I mean, it had a huge influence on the area and, you know, and also on my family. It kind of changed the trajectory of both, the area and my family. The result of that flood wound up becoming this huge project for the Army Corps of Engineers, where they built these really large dams in the area, and consequently, you know, created these lakes that, you know, they could now control the flood waters. But it also became, you know, it's become a really great place for recreation now because of these lakes and everything. So, you know, it kind of changed this sleepy little town into, you know, a somewhat of a destination, at least for people in that region. You know, and it changed the course of my family, because I think it basically led to the, you know, the divorce of my folks. So,
you were about 4 years old. How much of this, of the flood itself, do you remember?
I definitely have, you know, images of things. Like, one of the clearest images and maybe one of the earliest memories I have is once we were able to kind of get back to our house, I was able to look in the, you know, we still had water all around. So you could look into the basement windows and see the water in the basement. And, I had a little Mickey Mouse drum set in there. And so I have a very clear memory of looking into the window, and that drum set was placed on a piece of plywood or something. And so it was floating around the basement.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that's a pretty clear memory. And then, you know, the memory that I kind of have included in the song, with my brother, who actually falls into, one of the trenches that were dug out in front of our, down the street. They dug out right. these trenches and kind of pumped all the flood water into it, and then pumped, you know, from the trenches out and over the levee, that kind of protected, so was supposed to protect us from the town, but it basically just kind of created a pool when the water went up and over the dams. So
this is your older brother?
Yeah, he's two years older than
okay,
I am.
Okay, so he's about 6 years old. So what happened when he went into this this pool?
Well, basically, he was riding our bike across, you know, we had a little a door that was put across the trench so that we could get back and forth, and he was riding his bike and somehow fell over into the trench, and you know, he basically got himself out. We from what he says, you know, telling the story, is we wound up at a neighbor who kind of helped fix him up, because he was, you know, cut and bruised, and you know, it's just filthy, awful water. So they got him cleaned up, and I think you know, my parents actually don't have a great memory of that at all. So I think we kind of managed, because I think we would have been in really big trouble. So
did the water actually enter your house as well as your basement?
You know, it basically started creeping up the stairs. I don't think that it got to the, got into the first floor much, but I could be wrong.
Yeah,
I know it was a real, you know, it was a real mess for my folks.
So it sounds like the aftermath was almost as traumatic as the event itself.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I think the, you know, the actual, you know, days of the rain and stuff weren't, too terribly bad, at least for us. I think, you know, for my dad, there was a lot going on. Yeah, for us, you know, it was a lot of just like hanging out at my grandparents' house, until we were able to get back, into the house. And, you know, of course my dad was, kind of part of the whole, you know, the town leaders and stuff were trying to, you know, get the town back in shape and setting up, people with pumps and things to get the water out of their places. And, you know, and it kind of turned out, because he was a part of all of that, we were one of the last people to get pumped out, because, you know, I don't think he wanted necessarily for to look like there were any favorites played, you know,
because he was
involved. So, you know, I do recall my mom talking about, you know, that we didn't get cleaned out until long after we should have, probably.
Well, you're listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete, Sunshine 96.7 FM. I don't want to pry too much about the negative aspect of or result of all this, but you did mention that this kind of led to your parents' divorce.
Yeah.
And what was that, a long time coming after that, or what happened?
Yeah, it definitely took years after that, you know, as well. So this wasn't like the thing that broke the camel's back. It's probably the beginnings of the, you know, putting some cracks in the relationship, I think. Yeah. So, it was another 4 or so years until, you know, until it officially was broken up.
But that can, this kind of thing can be life changing. So you do write a lot about, nostalgia and characters and from these kind of small towns. You've got a song on the same album. Can't recall the name. It's about baseball. And
Pick Up Baseball. Yeah.
Pick Up Baseball. And you know, it's great. It just conjures up the classic, you know, the good old days. And what is it about that period of time, or the old days, so to speak, that appeals to you so much?
That's a really good question. You know, I think in some ways it's kind of like one of my go-tos for when I need to, you know, when I feel like I haven't been writing. And so, you know, rather than working from a prompt or something, I think going back to either, you know, childhood memories or, you know, thinking about that town, I think it just kind of starts to, you know, spark some imagination. And there's usually a lot of, you know, kind of visual for me, thinking back to that time and place. So it just feels like it's a, kind of a well that I can dip back into, that I don't necessarily have for other periods of my life, maybe. I don't think it's necessarily that I, you know, that I long for or love those days. In fact, sometimes it's, you know, I've got another song that I think was on the Big Fat Love record that is called Nostalgia. Actually, it's the one that the Woody Guthrie honorable mention song. It kind of, you know, looks back at, you know, at those nostalgic times, but, you know, then frames it as, well, it wasn't necessarily good times for everybody. So, you know, there's that element too.
Yeah. I think back to what Springsteen's song Glory Days. Mm. And about all the guys who were just living in the past, because, you know, those, right. That's where they peaked, you know, they peaked in high school.
Yeah.
And,
sure. Yeah.
And they just can't get beyond that. But that is not your situation at all. So let's see, what have you got coming up here? I know you've got this amazing songwriter round coming up, hosted by yours truly. I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh, I can't wait. Some great writers in that round. I mean, you know, you can't get any better than Louise Mossery and Kim Moberg and Mark Stepakoff. Kim and Mark are good friends, and Louise, I have loved her songwriting for forever. So, I mean, she's really special. They're all three of them. I can't wait. I'm really excited.
Plans to record again?
Not real soon. You know, I'm kind of on the 6-year cycle of albums. So, since After the Flood just came out, it probably will be a little while before I have another album.
Well, you know, if you can milk an album for 6 years, that's pretty good.
You know, right.
Well, you know, and this kind of brings up, you know, folk singers don't, the music doesn't really change much. It does in a way, but what you recorded 20 years ago can still feel current now, because of the genre. It's like a reggae tune from the 60s. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be a reggae tune from the 2020s. I hope I'm not saying something wrong here, but it's a style that's been part of music as a genre for so long.
Yeah. I mean, I think I get what you're, you know, saying.
I think if you compared it to country music has really evolved. And for better or for worse, it's kind of odd that it's evolved like it has. Whereas folk music, hasn't really, you know, it still tells a story. Often it's a story or a description, or, you know, it's very lyrical, in the message. And, you know, it's still finger picking and acoustic sound. And there certainly are, you know, diversions from that. But, the core songwriting, tends to still be somewhat consistent.
Yeah. Well, I think as, you know, folk writers, or at least contemporary, you know, songwriters, I think you're just kind of looking for that line of truth or whatever. And so I think, you know, songs that kind of try to, you know, aside from just the whole genre as a whole, I'm sure there are some songs that you can go back to and listen to and they sound a little dated maybe. Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, a lot of people write, you know, topical songs, in the folk genre, and sometimes those don't necessarily hold up. You know, again, that song Nostalgia, I kind of don't play much at all because it's kind of very Trump era, focused. So, you know, it kind of feels a little bit like it has a bit of a shelf life. But mm-hmm. as far as, like, you know, the general overall sound of the stuff, yeah, I think, you know, you're working with instrumentation that kind of keeps going.
Yeah. But this is the remarkable thing about it, is that even though there's a consistency there, or a continuity there, there's still something new is coming out all the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's like the beauty of, of CG&D. I mean, how many times can somebody keep coming up with a new song with these records? And they still do.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's amazing how that happens. Well, you really are. I mean, this song has a beautiful chord progression that I think, if I recall, it repeats pretty much throughout the whole thing, right?
It is just over and over again. Yeah, which is very unusual. It's unusual for me.
It is for you.
My stuff. Yeah. But you're right. It is doing the same damn thing all the way through that song. Yeah.
Now, is there something about that? Was that purposeful?
You know, not consciously purposeful, but I think, you know, for this song in particular, I really wanted the story to be, you know, forefront. So there's not a lot of distraction. I mean, it could almost be done just a cappella, honestly. So, you know, I think that guitar part is pretty just there to kind of support the story and the song. You know, it's pretty when you first hear it. But then it kind of, my hope is that it just kind of fades to the background and you're really just there in the story and in the song.
Yeah. Well, if you're listening to the lyrics, and it's a dramatic experience that kind of does draw you in. You know, it's not just not a silly love song. There's stuff going on here and it progresses. I can see how, I mean, it does work. And, you know, did you ever think, should I throw a bridge in here? You know, should I change up the chorus? And sometimes you just go, what the hell? You know, it's just not necessary to do.
Yeah. You know, certainly it's always in the, you know, the back of my mind. Okay. What, you know, does this need a bridge? Does this need something else? You know, I think bridges can oftentimes be overused. So I try to make sure that it really needs it, before kind of venturing off there to do that. But, I'm sure I wondered and thought about it. It just turned out that, you know, just the verse chorus kind of thing seemed to be most appropriate, at least for my mind with this particular song.
Yeah. Well, the rest of the album does have more instruments. It does have more chords, and it does have bridges and choruses.
It does. Yeah.
And it's excellent. 12 great songs. Well, let's see, Chris, thank you. I really appreciate your time on this. Your website is chrislavanchermusic.com.
That's right.
And LAVANCHER.music.com. And all kinds of good stuff on there. You can listen to things and you can slip Chris some money for some great music too. We will close out with the song that we talked about. Did you have anything you wanted to add on here? Famous last words?
I think, you know, just a shout out for, you know, the production on the album, even though you're not going to hear it on this particular song. But if you go listen to the album, Doug Kortler produced and added all of the other instrumentation on this album, After the Flood. So it's really, you know, a collaboration very much with him on this record.
Wow. Sounds like he's a ringer.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. That's great. All right, Chris, thank you so much. I'll see you in just a few weeks.
Okay. I really look forward to it, Steve. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. You're welcome, Chris. And now coming up is Chris LaVancher singing After the Flood.
After the flood, after all the mud has been cleared away, she couldn't stay. The gray skies opened up, the rain poured down as the levees were breached and drowned my small town. I remember the water as it climbed up our stairs. So we sheltered with my grandparents to my mother's despair. After the flood, after all the mud has been cleared away, she couldn't stay. My father found his purpose, joined the call to public service. In a small motorboat, patrolled the streets of our town. He rescued some neighbors, Mrs. Fuller and her son. And he talked down the grocer, defending his store with a gun. After the flood, after all the mud has been cleared away, she couldn't stay. The water would not recede. It stayed and it stayed. So pumps were deployed to pump it away. And they dug out some trenches along every street and filled them with flood water. The smell it did reek. An old wooden door across the trench for a bridge. My brother on his bicycle fell into the ditch. And I watched from the sidewalk, thought for sure he was dead, as the fast rushing floodwaters covered his head. But somehow he managed to pull himself up, and he clawed up the trench wall, scraped and covered in mud. After the flood, after all the mud has been cleared away, she couldn't stay. Soak town, and my father worked round the clock, and home was rarely found. So all on her own, she was left to clean up our house that was layered in 4 inches of mud. After the flood, after all the mud has been cleared away, she could not stay.
Thanks for listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete. If you like what you hear, you can find Song Creating on your favorite podcast app or at songcreating.com. To check out my own music, go to steverobb.com. And until next time, keep a song in your head and music in your heart. Thanks for listening.